This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, take you down to Language Town. Coming up in today's show, your brain on language.
To warm up, here's some word history.
The etymology of banal. Ban has its roots in the old Germanic banan, which meant to proclaim or forbid. So it had the sense of a law, a decree, including decrees in medieval times and beyond, pertaining to the use of and payment for shared facilities, such as ovens and wells and mills. With this sense of communality, ban evolved in French to refer to compulsory service, so the word took on the idea of something applying to all, and thence to being commonplace. That's what the French adjective banal had come to mean by the time English nabbed it around 1840. And since, banal has only become more negative. Commonplace has degraded to being hackneyed or trite. Trite, by the way, is from the Latin tritus, worn down, conveying the notion that something has become dull and overfamiliar from repeat use. Possibly it's unwise of me to put these words in your mind before we embark upon today's linguistic jaunt. Jaunt being from a 16th century term for tiring out a horse. Etymology is not on my side today. On with the show.
So what we're trying to understand is the processes that are going on in your head right now as you try and understand what I'm saying.
Jenny Rodd is a cognitive psychologist at University College London, and I think she can look right through my skull to see these processes at work.
If I could do that, that would make my job a whole heap easier. Unfortunately, we can't look directly into your brain, so we have to come up with cunning and devious experiments that are the next best thing.
Experiments studying how people respond to language, written or spoken, sometimes while the subject undergoes an fMRI scan, functional magnetic resonance imaging, to show what the brain is up to.
But what we want to understand is, for each word that you hear, or possibly read, what it is that you're doing in your head to figure out what that individual word means, and then how you put those together to understand the meaning of sentences, paragraphs, conversations, and so on.
Your brain is hard at it right now. Well done, your amazing brain, for habitually coping with a task that is far from straightforward.
And I think what we're increasingly realising is how sophisticated people are in integrating lots of different cues to make these best guesses as they go along. And I think the computer scientists trying to develop software to allow our phones to do all this stuff are similarly realising quite how complicated the algorithms need to be to understand the meanings of words. Because you look up just about any word in a dictionary and you'll find a whole host of meanings.
Little game for you. Think of a word which only has one meaning. Dog? Now, that can be a noun and a verb. Shelf. Book or geological? Unkindness. It's an emotion and the collective noun for ravens. How about unequivocal?
Unambiguous words are completely the exception. So if you try and think of an unambiguous word, it's incredibly difficult. All words have, kind of shades of meaning. So for example, a word like run, you think, well, that's quite simple. If somebody runs, it's an action. But you can have a politician running for election. You can have a river running down a valley. You can have a film running at the cinema. And all these things mean slightly different things. And you have to properly understand what somebody's saying. You have to get to the right meaning.
Words usually don't appear in isolation, so your brain will take into account the context.
Absolutely. So if we're sitting here at UCL and I say to you, please pass me the mouse, you're probably going to look for a computer mouse rather than some small animal scurrying around the carpet. So you're using the context of where we are and what is plausible and likely for me to mean for you to figure out what sort of mouse I'm referring to.
Right, so how is my brain coming to this correct conclusion?
What your brain is doing is using multiple cues. So there's no one cue that is going to give you the right answer all of the time. You're constantly making best guesses, and sometimes you'll get it wrong, but the vast majority of time you'll get it right, and you do that by using lots of different bits of information. So you'll use information about the context, so where we are, what we've been talking about so far. You'll use information about the relative likelihoods, the probabilities of the two meanings. So, for example, in your life, the computer mouse is probably more frequent than the animal mouse.
That does depend on whether I work in the Apple Store or pest control.
All other things being equal, you would go for the word meaning that you'd encountered most often. You'd also use your recent experience. So if we'd spent the last 5 minutes talking about rats and mice and zoos and pets, then you would have a different bias. So you can use your very recent history of that word to bias your interpretation. And there's lots of other cues, but all of these kind of work together so that each meaning will be activated, if you like, in proportion to its likelihood. And on average, that will give you the right answer.
While your brain is rapidly flipping through the options to find an appropriate meaning, this is what's happening inside it.
So if a particular part of your brain is working harder, it needs additional energy to do that, and so it recruits additional blood flow to that region. And so we can look at those changes in blood flow, and we can look to see how that varies depending on whether you're listening to an easy sentence or a hard sentence, and we can subtract the two and see which regions are showing different patterns.
That's how the fMRI scan shows which regions of your brain are active during a linguistic task, by measuring those changes in blood flow. And though Jenny says fMRI is a fairly crude gauge of brain activity, it can show if particular linguistic forms are especially demanding.
If I asked you to understand a sentence that had complex grammatical structure, so something like the boy who had visited his grandma while wearing a red hat was angry, you would see a lot more activation in the front area of the left hemisphere compared to a simple sentence such as the boy was angry. And similarly for words that have multiple meanings. So if I asked you to understand a sentence like the jam was on the other motorway, where you've heard the word jam, you're thinking that probably is to do with toast and bread. And then you get to the word motorway and you realise you've got it all wrong and you have to go back and refigure it out.
Jenny found that with these examples where words could have multiple interpretations, the extra activity your brain performs is similar to how it responds to mild enemies, puns.
Well, what's going on with puns is they're constructed so that both meanings are relevant. But they're carefully constructed so that to get the pun, you have to find both meanings. Whereas in natural language, we almost do the opposite. We're trying to make sure that the person that is understanding the sentence is only understanding one meaning and the other meaning is totally suppressed. I mean, we have no clue why puns are funny. We have no clue why this weird linguistic technique of activating two meanings simultaneously, why some people find that funny, is totally unclear.
There's only so much a brain scanner can tell you. Ambiguity is one challenge for your brain. Conflicting information is another. There's one particularly well-known test for this, you may have tried it, where the names of colours are written in different colours.
Stroop experiments.
Named after the American psychologist John Ridley Stroop.
A Stroop experiment, so you would see the word blue written in red ink, and the task is to name the colour of the ink, and people find it very hard to do that when there's an inconsistency between the word that's written and the colour of the ink. And this is always taken as evidence for the automaticity of reading, that we can't help but read the meaning of the word. And it's a really, really robust finding.
And scans show that during Stroop tests, there is activation in the same area of the brain, the left frontal lobe, as when you're trying to interpret sentences containing tricky, ambiguous words, such as the jam was on the other motorway.
It's a case of you've got conflicting information. Whenever things are the same, when you've got multiple cues pushing you in the same direction, it's easy. So when the colour of the ink and the word in the ink is the same, it's easy. But as soon as those things are pushing you in different directions, it's hard. So it's a bit like the jam example, where what makes that hard is the context. The words in the sentence are pushing you one way, and the frequency of the word is pushing you the other way, because the bread meeting is much more frequent. So you've got two conflicting cues pulling you in different directions, and it just takes a bit more effort, if you like, cognitive effort, to resolve that conflict and decide how you're going to weight those cues and which meaning you're going to go for.
Which part of the brain is governing language comprehension?
Most of it. So one of the most salient findings is if you put people in a brain scanner and you ask them to understand complicated connected language, that you get lots of activation, mainly on the left side, although not exclusively. So there's lots of work showing that language is left lateralized, but that means that the left hemisphere does more in most people.
And before you get into that left brain plodder, right brain creative character analysis,
the analytical thinker left brain, the creative artistic right brain, that's just nonsense. It's one of those ideas that seems to have got stuck in popular culture, and I'm not really sure why. People seem to like it. They seem to like this idea that buried within us. We have two people that are able to think in different ways, and really there's no evidence to support that general claim.
And anyway, language is a prime combination of practicality and creativity. Practical in its intent to convey meaning, and creative in the expression and interpretation of that meaning, which makes it fascinating and ever problematic.
The representation you're building in your head of what I'm saying is probably slightly different to the representation that I'm starting with. But as long as you're getting something close enough to what I intended, then hopefully it makes sense and we can carry on communicating. But it'll never be exactly the same because there are all these shades of meaning.
It's amazing it goes as well as it does.
It is. It is. And I think thinking about how computers do this stuff is kind of makes us realise quite how clever we are, really.
Yeah, computers, you may be able to process in a nanosecond far more information than my brain will ever know, but can you tell which jam I'm thinking of right now?
What's your favourite jam? Traffic jam, traffic jam. What's your favourite jam? Traffic jam. What's wrong with raspberry?
Thanks very much to Jenny Rodd. She is a cognitive psychologist based at University College London. You can find out more about her work with the Word Lab at jennyrodd.com. Jenny with an I, Rodd with two Ds. Jenny Rodd is also her Twitter handle. Worth following because sometime you might be able to take part in one of her psychological tests. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is Meniliform, adjective, zoology and botany, resembling a string of beads.
Bees?
Beads. Try using it in an email today. I learnt a word while making this episode as well. Paronomasia, noun, the use of the word in different senses, or the use of words similar in sound to achieve a specific effect, as humour or a dual meaning. It's a posh term for pun. This Is Your Brain on Language was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with Devon Taylor and Chica Ayres. The music is by Martin Austwick. You also heard a clip of Jam by Ivor Cutler. Thanks to Rishikesh Hirway of Radiotopian sibling Song Exploder and the latest addition to the collective, The West Wing Weekly, essential listening for any West Wing fan. Seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter, and come visit the show at home at theallusionist.org.